Or you can be a real ham. Or you can be a can of cold spam.
It's your choice, Hamilton, Hamlet, or Ham.
In New York.
New York.
Just you wait.
Lin-Manuel Wallace Hamilton.
He's the Ham and Spamilton.
He's waiting in the wings for you.
You may have left town.
Well, if that music itself sounded really familiar to you, it's probably because you are familiar with one of the greatest shows of all time, Hamilton the Musical, which is going to be playing forever over at the Private Bank Theater, which I will always call the Schubert Theater, downtown. And it's one of the best musicals ever. And so whenever you have an incredibly strong, really good musical, you can kind of always assume that there's a guy named Gerard Alessandrini who is going to step in and make sure you never forget that show by creating some of the greatest parody work in the world, which he has been doing for so many years. And, well, anyway, I'm going to tell you all about it, but let's just start by saying, Gerard, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for being so generous and glad to be here.
Because I love your work. I've known your work for so long. We actually have some mutual friends, people who have been in some of your work. We'll deal with that later. And also joining us, one of the finance actors of this cast of Spamilton, who plays, he's listed as playing male 3, but he's actually playing Aaron Burr. Actually, he's playing Leslie Odom Jr., who plays Aaron Burr. So many layers to this, as these guys know, is the actor Eric Lewis.
I mean, it's all sort of a dream-like mix-up. So, but he's basically playing the same motivations as Aaron Burr, but he's doing it as Leslie Odom. Or any actor who plays the Aaron Burr role in Hamilton.
Gotcha.
So it's like we could call it multi-layered. I don't know if you want to use that word for parried, but that's what it is.
Well, let's do it. And Gerard, you are known for, I don't know how many, like over 20 that I remember, forbidden Broadway shows that have played New York and Los Angeles and London. Greg Edelman is one of our mutual friends, I think.
Oh, Greg, of course, he's a great talent.
Indeed, and he's done forbidden Broadway, as has pretty much everybody has wanted to be in one of your shows. But I'm going to start with you, Gerard, and ask you, what gave you this sense many years ago to look at the Broadway shows and the Broadway classics and say, we just need to do forbidden stuff about this. We need to just have a lot of fun with this
show. I never thought of it as a need to be done. It was just something I naturally gravitated to. I mean, I studied music and drama in college, and I always had something funny to say about current-day musicals. I grew up in Boston, seeing a lot of shows playing out of town before they got to New York. Then I moved to New York, and there were all these new musicals, and it was always fun to talk about what was around and what new stars were coming. And then at some point, I just started, for my friends, I just started writing parody songs of Don't Cry For Me, Argentina, and, you know, The Pirates of Penzance, and making fun of the stars and the shows. And it all came together, and it just sort of happened. And it was a beautiful thing, I guess, because it lasted for years. But I didn't feel a need. I just sort of gravitated that way naturally.
And your stuff is incredible. People should know, you're also a singer, you're a performer yourself. I mean, you've actually even written material for, am I right, you've done some specials like for Bob Hope, Angela Lansbury. You've been
right, yeah. I wrote something for the new Barbra Streisand album that's out, the duets. And, I'm a little older now, but originally I was a performer. And originally, one of the reasons I did Forbidden Broadway was to have a vehicle for myself as a performer and my friends. So I used to do some of these parts. These multi-layered parts. So I know what the actors are feeling when they're up there going from number to number.
And very important that you do it. And imagine getting a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Drama League at age 20.
No, it wasn't 20.
Yeah, well.
Maybe 35. Well,
I love it. Now, Eric, let's take a look. Because, you've been seen in a lot of shows. I know you were in My Way, the Frank Sinatra tribute. We've seen you in Chicago, The Little Mermaid, In the Heights, and Tommy. Dreamgirls at Porchlight, by the way, one of my... Well, actually, I happen to be a huge fan of Porchlight Music Theater. I think they do incredible stuff.
Yeah.
But talk to me about being in Spamilton. I mean, hey, some people get to be in Hamilton and other folks get to be in Spamilton. And in many ways, it's kind of a similar vibe, right? Because you're still performing, when it comes to the music, this incredible, incredible music.
Yes, it's very similar to that, where we are doing a lot of the songs from Hamilton, but also there are a lot of songs from lots of Broadway shows in our show. Gerard said, like, it's like multi-layered, like you're always playing more than one thing, so it's a challenge in that way, but it also makes it a lot more fun.
And Gerard, when I, because I've seen so many Forbidden Broadways, is this where we have, and you got some great talent in this cast, by the way. One of the people, yes, got Yondo Lopez in him. I love him. He's a great Chicago talent, among others. But it's sort of a smaller cast, but by the time you're done with them, we feel like we have a million people on the stage.
Yes, you do. It's sometimes people are surprised that it's only five actors that have done the show at the end. And, yeah, they're not only doing their characters from Hamilton and some of the original stars of Hamilton, like Lin-Manuel, but they're also doing parodies of other Broadway luminaries, because Spamilton's kind of about not just Hamilton. It's about what it does or how it fits in the whole category of musical theaters, musical theater shows. So, you know, sometimes people ask me, oh, is it like Forbidden Broadway? I go, like, well, no, it's own musical, and it even has a vague sort of book, hopefully a funny book. But instead of doing a Hamilton spoof in a new Forbidden Broadway, this is a spoof of Hamilton called Spamilton that has little bits of Forbidden Broadway in it here and there.
Which is great. But this is playing, by the way, over at the Royal George Theater, and you want to get tickets, although it's open. Actually, as people are hearing this podcast, the show is pretty much just opening, and we'll hopefully have a great long run, but I wouldn't wait. I would get your tickets very, very soon to see. I can't wait to see it. I'm really excited, and people can go to the royalgeorgetheater.com. We'll say that again before we're done. But first of all, I should, George, tell us, what do you do in Spamilton? I'm familiar with your work, so I kind of get what's going on, but for people who haven't seen these kind of parody shows before, what are they going to see?
Well, I use mostly the music from Hamilton. There are touches of other little shows in there. But I've taken the lyrics and I've turned them inside out or added new lyrics for comedy effects. So it's Hamilton with a new set of lyrics. And it's got a story. The story is about how Lin-Manuel came to create Hamilton. So, and it's a fantasy. I don't know Lin-Manuel that well. I know him a little bit. But I've sort of made up this story, again, hopefully funny or hysterical, how he came to write Hamilton. And while he's doing that, there's another layer. You're also sort of seeing the story of Hamilton at the same time. So basically, it's a big, elaborate spoof of Hamilton and Lin-Manuel Miranda. And it was great to do a whole show spoof this time because the country, you know, has embraced the score of Hamilton, and so many people already know the lyrics, the real lyrics. So they laugh out loud when they hear the funny lyrics or the new lyrics.
Indeed. And if I interviewed Lin a while back, and that was one of the things he said. When you'd go on stage, if you drop a line, he goes, you can't, because the audience knows your line.
That's right. This is the first musical in decades where the public has immediately learned the script and the score and the music right away. So there's many people that know it. And you don't have to have seen Hamilton. People enjoy the CD or the soundtrack of Hamilton, and they know it, or they've heard it on the radio, or gosh, I was in Bed Bath & Beyond a few weeks ago, and they were playing one of the songs from Hamilton.
So it's everywhere.
They're everywhere.
I have my Alexa at home. Alexa, play Hamilton. and it will. Eric, would you, as you perform, I mean, you know, for people that have seen Hamilton, I got to tell you, just getting a grip on the lyrics, and I'm sure, Gerard, you're playing to that sort of rap hip-hop pattern that we see in Hamilton. You pretty much have to. Eric, how tough is that? To memorize, to learn, to get a control over those kind of complex lyrics.
Yeah, it's a task to say the least. There are a lot of lyrics, a lot of different tongue twisting consonants and different things that you have to get in. But I think it makes it easier when you can understand the story and where you're going to kind of take that journey there.
And in work that you've done, I mentioned it, some of it before, you know, Dreamgirls and over at Porchlight Theater, but you've done so many other, Parade, How to Succeed in Business. I just feel like doing something that, even it's Spamilton, but it's still, this has got to be special for you. This has to be, in some ways, a dream, because this show is anything but a traditional kind of, well, actually, in some ways it's traditional, but but arguably so different from just some of the stuff in your background.
Yes,
like
very different.
Seussical the Musical, right? This is mm-hmm. not going to be the same kind of experience for you.
Yes, it's very different, and I'm taking this opportunity to learn a lot, especially from Gerard and his direction, and just the structure of this show is so different that you have to play different things and your mind has to constantly be working out the different layers that are on top of the scene that you're playing. So it's a challenge.
If I may interject about Eric, he moves wonderfully. You know, he's a wonderful dancer. Mm. And our version of Spamilton or Hamilton, the spoof, is that it's got a lot of movement by Jerry McIntyre, a lot of really funny movement and dance that's just as energetic as anything in Hamilton, but funny. And Eric is particularly good at covering that area. And I think you're our dance captain, right, Eric?
Yes,
he's great. So not only is he a great singer and a great actor, but what a terrific dancer. I mean, Eric, you're a great triple threat.
Oh, I love it.
Thank you.
And looking forward to seeing it. And obviously, I'm sure one of the things you don't have at Royal George, I don't think you have rotating turntables that go, you know, opposite ways as the Hamilton shows do. But I'm just curious because I have not yet seen the show. Do you have fun with that? Is that part of the mocking too?
A little bit. I think I had more fun with it when we spoofed Les Mis years ago. But yes, we do that. We do the show clockwise like they do in Hamilton. And absolutely, you know, Hamilton's a big stylish production, and we absolutely have fun spoofing it and making it a miniature size spoof here at the Royal George Theater.
And of course, I try and ask questions I think listeners would ask too. And if I was a listener, I'd be going, isn't Lin-Manuel Miranda really ticked that you have done this? Except I know that his comment on the show was, I laughed my brains out. So my guess is there's nobody who appreciates what you're doing more than the creator of Hamilton.
He seems to like it. Well, you know, we just did a cast album of Spamilton, right? And I had a write to him. I sent him an email. I said, Lin-Manuel, do you mind if we put that quote on the front of the album? Yeah, I laughed my brains out. Because he came to Spamilton and he did laugh his brains out. And then he wrote back and he said, no, I've always been such a fan of Ben Marty. One night when I knew your CD and your spoof of Rent was coming out, I couldn't wait till the store opened at Barnes & Noble to run down and get the cast album where we had your spoof of Rent. So I'm so excited there's a spoof of Hamilton coming out called Spamilton on CD. So I guess he's with it. He's a great guy.
He's cool. He just really is cool. And by the way, you know, I was actually at his final performance in New York.
You were?
At the invitation of the producers.
$10,000 to get in?
Oh, I got to tell you. No, dude. I got to tell you. Can I tell you this? I sat next to Spike Lee.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Secretary of State John Kerry behind us.
Oh,
J-Lo behind us. Jane Fonda across the way. It was just unbelievable. And in fact, Lynn's parents were sitting right in front of me, his mom and dad. And but of course, as you know, he grew his hair. I don't know if you have fun with this. We'll find out. But he grew his hair out for the show. And at the end of the show, I saw him, you know, 2 minutes after the show, he comes out. He cut the ponytail off.
He probably couldn't wait.
So I asked him about that. That was exactly right. And I said, what happened to it? He said he gave it to his dad, who I said, oh, I thought it'd be a charity thing. He says, I hope so. He's probably got it in a drawer somewhere.
But, yeah, because he had to be on the cover of GQ the next week.
Yeah, exactly. So. Right. Yeah, and he should be. He's a good-looking guy. So, Eric, do you think for people who have not seen Hamilton, I've seen it 3 times, so I'm an exception to this because I will appreciate absolutely everything that happens in Spamilton. Talk to me about why people who haven't seen Hamilton will nevertheless enjoy Spamilton.
I think that people who haven't seen it will enjoy it because, as we were talking about, like, Hamilton is everywhere. Me, myself, like, I have not seen Hamilton, but I know the lyrics from listening to the album and hearing it on the radio and the mixtape that they did with all the stars coming in and
That's
redoing
great.
Like
great.
Hamilton has been everywhere. So and because the story of Hamilton is sung through all the way, so you know the complete story just by listening to the soundtrack. And so, like, just spoofing those words, people will get that and they will understand it.
And I also think we're, as with Forbidden Broadway, Spamilton is spoofing the hype of Hamilton, and that's pretty hard to ignore if you've been in America in the last 2 years. So,
and the thing is, you know, your Forbidden Broadway shows, Gerard, again, so classic, and the people, if they're not familiar with Forbidden Broadway, so many of them are on CD. I have like a whole collection of them, and in fact, I'll have to bring them for you to sign when we meet. But anyway, the thing is, you have to keep updating it because Broadway changes. Spamilton is different, right? Because Spamilton is Hamilton, it's a done deal. You don't have to go back and revisit this, or will you, to make it, for some reason, more timely in the future?
Well, we don't have to as of yet, but I was thinking, you know, Lin-Manuel's making this movie, Mary Poppins, you know, depending on what kind of hit that is or not,
right.
We may want to at least talk about something like that. So, you know, when things happen to Broadway shows, like maybe they'll put you know, Russell Crowe in the national tour of Hamilton. So you got to do something about that, you know. So
now, what about here? Of course, this was the first time that a true, well-known celebrity ahead of time, Wayne Brady, who's now in there for a period of time playing the Aaron Burr role.
Right.
So, Eric, is there any nod to Wayne Brady?
No, not right this second.
Not yet. I think Gerard's going. Wait a minute. I got something I got to write tonight.
Maybe that's a number, but a reference. So I like Wayne Brady. He's actually funny. He does freestyle rap. I've seen him do it. He's great at it.
Yeah, and my understanding, I have not seen him in the role. Joshua Henry, who opened the role here, was amazing. And he's now, I think, over in San Francisco for that cast. But it's just, it's so hard to imagine anybody, stepping into some of these roles that the original cast made famous. But the truth is people can do it, and it works. And because I've watched a little B-roll of your show, we're playing a little bit into and out of the interview here. But you guys, your voices, and I'm speaking to Eric, they're just as amazing as the original cast. I mean, it's,
they are.
And they have to be, right? They have to be.
He's got a great voice. He has to be, yeah. And he's a good actor, like I said, triple threat. But they all do. I mean, we can't, if you're singing the music from Hamilton, and we haven't changed the keys, and we keep mending the vocal arrangements, they have to sing it with the way it is in Hamilton. It just has new Spamilton lyrics.
I love it. Well, if you need an understudy for George Washington, I would like to do that.
Okay.
I think I could maybe put, I was going to say I'd like to play Philip Hamilton, but I don't know, I might be a little too old for that. But hell, if you're getting Lifetime Awards at 20, Gerard, I can play Philip Hamilton.
Okay.
The show is Spamilton, and I'm telling you, I'm sure everybody's a fan of Hamilton, but whether you've seen Hamilton or you haven't, put this on your agenda to see, because if this is half as good as the work that Gerard has done in the past with his Forbidden Broadway works and other shows, you are in for a night like no other, and I promise you, I'll probably have you guys back down the road once we see it, because I just expect this to be absolutely incredible.
Well, thank you, Paul. Thanks. And we're so happy to be here in Chicago with the show.
Yeah,
I wanted
to
bring it here because it was, Chicago was also the first big city that Hamilton played in. And also, we've had great experience in Chicago with Forbidden Broadway, so we definitely wanted to come back here first.
And I'm sure you can work pizza and hot dogs all into the show at one point,
Of course.
In time. You can get tickets at theroyalgeorgetheater.com. Theater is spelled the proper way, R-E at the end, the way the British spell it, not the way we've ruined it with an E-R. It's theroyalgeorgetheater.re.com at the end. You don't want to miss it. It's just opened over at Royal George, and hopefully it'll play for a long time, but get your tickets quickly. Give it a lot of support, too, because this is just important. You can also visit the website, spamilton.com, and get familiar with this show. It's I can't wait for it. Gerard Alessandrini, the creator of this show, Eric Lewis, I just can't wait to see you perform in this show. I'm sure Leslie feels the same way. You'll probably get every one of those cast members coming to see you. Thanks for joining me, and you know what? We're going to play us out with a little bit more of the fabulous parody music of Spamilton, an American parody.
So why did you miss? Why did you miss? The lyrics go by so fast and you are in the abyss. I see you sitting there and looking before.
Well, as always, a big week in politics. Now, we're going to talk about the president's address to a joint session of Congress. If you're wondering, by the way, why don't we call that a State of the Union? Isn't this the State of the Union? The answer is yes, except we never call it the State of the Union when the president gives their first address to Congress. It's just not considered a State of the Union. So next year, if President Trump gives his State of the Union address, it'll actually be his first. What's happening this week is his address to a joint session of Congress. And I want to talk about it. We're actually recording this podcast before he gives that speech. And I do realize, listeners, you're all hearing this after he's given the speech. So we're going to do a little prognostication and guessing and evaluation. But there's no better person to do that with than my regular Democratic strategist guest, Brad Bannon, president of Bannon Communications Research. And Brad, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on again, Paul.
As always, so again, acknowledging that anything we say now, as our listeners hear this, they're going to know whether we were accurate or not, because the address will be behind us. But it is what we need to talk about this week, because it's a big deal. And so that being said, there is thought that the president is going to strike a key of unity, that's most important this time around. What do you think? Is it doable? Is it possible? Is it within his ability to do it?
Well, the short answer is, again, we'll see what he says, but that would surprise me, because he's just not, he's prone to polarization, not unity. If you look at any speech he gave during the campaign, if you look at anything he's said and done since he's been elected president, it's all basically geared to activate his conservative base, and that results in polarization. If he does give a unity speech tonight, it will be the first one he ever gave.
I hear you. And on the other hand, I would counter that with saying that the president himself said, you know, in terms of how's he doing in his first month in the presidency, he gave himself an A. I guess he's a, you know, maybe an easy grader. But at the same time, he admitted that when it comes to communication, he gave himself a C or C plus. And so, Brad, maybe that's the indicator that even he understands the need for a difference in tone tonight. He's not speaking to one of his rallies. He's talking to a group, almost half of whom don't like the guy.
Well, yeah, and again, your listeners will know when they hear this whether I'm right or wrong, but it's just not in Donald Trump's nature. He may try to give a unity speech, but the reality is he's a lot more comfortable when he pits one side against another. And again, maybe he'll surprise us in his joint session speech, but I'm a little dubious.
Okay, fair enough. Let's talk about the substance of it. No question he's going to talk about health care. And we're not going to do an entire review because, again, of the timing of the podcast taping being, you know, being sort of before he gives the speech and afterwards. So let's talk about health care itself. Seems to be a little bit of discomfort among Republicans in terms of whether or not they can really support this whole repeal thing, because it seems to be unclear exactly what the replacement mechanism is. You listen to Speaker Paul Ryan. It sounds like they're good to go. You talk to some other Republican congressmen, and they're a little more nervous about it.
Well, I think they have reason to be nervous. I don't think they really have a replacement plan for Obamacare. And I think that's why things are so confused on the Hill. The reality is there are the hardcore conservatives, the Tea Party Republicans in the Congressional Caucus, want to repeal Obamacare right away, and they don't care whether there's a replacement for it or not. But there are some Republicans who come from more moderate districts who are scared to death that if they vote to abolish Obamacare and don't replace it with something comparable, they're going to get hit really hard in the midterm elections next year. And one of the realities is that there are 23 Republican Congress members of the House of Representatives who represent districts that voted for Hillary Clinton last year. And those 23 Republicans who are representing Hillary Clinton districts, essentially, have a lot to worry about. And if the Republicans go ahead and repeal Obamacare without replacing it, I think they're inviting major political trouble.
You know, one of the things the president did recently say, of course, was, boy, this health care thing, much more complex than anybody knew. Well, I'm not sure it's more complex than anybody knew. President Obama himself used to stand at a podium and talk about the complexities of the health care system. So maybe the problem was trying to make it seem like this was not a complex problem. And that being said, people in general may not understand the complexities of health care. It does get pretty, you know, thick and into the weeds, I should say. But that being said, they will understand if they wake up one day and they don't have health care and aren't able to get it for whether it's a pre-existing condition or whatever it may be. That they will understand.
Yeah, I think so. There are approximately 18 million Americans who have health care insurance only because of Obamacare. And the minute you repeal Obamacare, you're going to leave 18 million Americans on the street without health care. You're going to allow the health insurance companies to treat their customers like cattle again. You know, I'm sure the president is going to talk about health care tonight, but honestly, I think the big story that might come out of the speech is that I think the president is going to propose massive budget cuts. Essentially, what the president wants to do, I understand, is add increased defense spending by 10%, and it's already 10% of the defense budget is a hell of a lot more money. And to do that, he's going to make massive cuts in domestic programs, which is going to make life for governors, including the governor of Illinois, very messy. I mean, Illinois already has a major budget struggle if they get less federal money, and that's what the president wants to do. It's going to make the budget stalemate in Illinois even worse. And for instance, I believe the president's going to say that in order to come up with the money for defense spending, he's going to cut the State Department budget by 37%. And essentially, he's going to eliminate a lot of foreign aid, a lot of programs that the United States funds to build economies in different countries. And honestly, I think that's going to cause quite a furor tonight.
Well, and by the way, interesting point, of course, as you know, the governor's conference going on those last few days in Washington, and Illinois' Governor Bruce Rauner went there for a meeting or two, but didn't stay, didn't get together for the dinner, came on home, and isn't talking much about things. So it does make you wonder whether or not he, you know, was not getting through, whether he didn't get any good news from Illinois. We don't know. We'll see what happens over time. But back on the cuts that you're talking about, you're right, $54 billion is the plan to add to defense, about 10%. And that's fine. I mean, I think if you go to, you know, you think about Trump supporters, the real question is if you shift the earth a little bit, it's what gives Trump supporters questions, because that base just stays with them. So they're going to be happy to hear that there's a 10% increase in defense. We all want a strong country, and defense did take some hits because of the sequester over the last few years. But cutting from the EPA, which is going to be significant, some of the other social programs you're talking about, the question is, Brad, will Trump supporters go, what are you doing? Or will they go, yeah, that's where we need those cuts. And the foreign aid, by the way, what could be more popular in a country that thinks we only care about ourselves anymore than to cut foreign aid? Of course, the heck with everybody else. Spend it on us. It's about us.
Well, to answer your first question, I think the hardcore the president's hardcore following is going to be very happy because Republicans have been calling for Defense Department spending increases for several years now. And I think this is going to make the Republicans in Congress very happy. And it's most likely to make unhappy, my guess is, your governor, Governor Rauner, and the House Speaker, Mike Madigan, because I believe next fiscal year the budget impasse that the Illinois is dealing with now is going to be small potatoes compared to the crisis next year if the president's budget cuts go through. And that may mean increased taxes for people in Illinois and other states. So I think there'll be a lot of concern about the domestic budget cuts.
Well, another way that there could be some cuts to the states aside from just of those plans, we do know the president's guests tonight are going to be apparently survivors of the victims of people, you know, illegal immigrants who killed somebody, and he's bringing their family members there. Obviously, okay, that's touching. We know a lot of Democratic guests are bringing as their people, you know, immigrants who are doing great things, illegal and not. But my question is, if indeed the president's going to look at sanctuary cities, and Chicago is one, and so many of them around the country, and is going to cut off funding there, that's just one more level upon which the states take a hit.
Yeah, it is. And I think generally elected officials around the country, mayors, governors, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, are going to be very concerned about the domestic cuts the president wants to do because it will impact all sorts of decisions. If you cut off federal aid to Chicago, that's going to cause a big problem, especially if at the same time you're cutting aid to the state and the city on, you know, domestic programs. So I think, you know, Republicans in Washington will probably be ecstatic tonight, or most of them will be. I think state and local government officials are going to be horrified.
Well,
because
the feeling,
essentially what the president's doing, he's punting the ball to governors and mayors and saying good luck.
All of this sounds like, again, a speech to his base, but assuming the president wants to do a little more reach out, and we're prognosticating a little bit here, but what does he have to do? In other words, if he talks about infrastructure, he'll have Democrats on board with that. Although from everything that I'm sure both of us are hearing, this notion of the grand infrastructure bill, $10 trillion infrastructure bill, whatever it was, seems to be going by the wayside. What is it he can do to reach out that will be reasonable within his? Because, listen, one of the things he'll probably say tonight is, I made the American people a promise and I'm keeping my promise. And he is. You like it or not, he's keeping his promises. What can he do to reach across the aisle?
Well, I think a lot of it is in the tone of his speeches. I mean, the context for this is that if you look at the national polls, Donald Trump's job rating at this point in his presidency is lower than any other president's in recorded political history, in polling history. And so I think a lot of it is his tone. He comes across as angry. He comes across as divisive. And as long as he comes across that, continues to come across that way, it's going to be hard for him to improve his standing. So honestly, I think a lot of it is the tone of the speech and the way he talks. And it will be interesting to see whether he tried does anything about that. But I think it's the tone more than anything else.
As we look ahead a little bit, obviously the new travel ban coming out soon, perhaps even out as you and I are talking, so we'll see and know. But that being said, according to Stephen Miller, his 31-year-old senior advisor who got himself into a bit of hot water last time he spoke on the Sunday morning shows, he says this travel ban, just some tweaks to it, basically the same ban, which essentially is a message to the courts that they ought to strike it down again.
Well, yeah, if it's basically the same, if they're just tweaking it a little bit, it's just going to go down in flames in the federal courts like it did last time. And the issue they've got to get around, the federal court said, and all the judges who ruled on this at the federal district court level and the circuit court of appeals were unanimous, that since the travel ban, it covers seven countries that a majority Muslim, that constitutes a religious test, and the First Amendment bans the United States government from using religious tests. And so if this thing is going to pass, get through the federal courts, they're going to have to find a way around that religious issue, and if they don't, it's just going to go down in flames all over again.
Well, Brad, let's you and I post some notes on Facebook. We'll ask listeners to do the same after they've heard the speech tonight and then they're listening to this podcast to see just how accurate we were. Let's hope you're always correct, so I'm sure you've been right on in everything you've been saying, and we'll monitor this as we go. But I thank you for your time. It's kind of fun to look ahead knowing that it's going to be rear view window time as people listen in. But you know what? One way or another, this address to the Joint Congress is going to be behind us real soon.
Yeah, it's going to. I don't think it's going to be dull. I think there'll be plenty for your listeners to pay attention to.
And we will, and we'll do it with you again in the future. Thank you, my friend. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.